I've been recently called terribly curious. Basically, Michelangelo was trolling 15th century style.
There it is. Yes.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
It is Wednesday, hump day. Greg Bach is here, comedian, comedy club owner, bearded American, good friend.
Homo sapien.
Homo sapien.
I'm all those things. Am I on right now?
You are on right now.
I can't hear myself at all.
Oh, well, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well.
Left
my coffee on the coffee maker, but I'll get that back in a little bit.
Well, you got 12 minutes until we go to our first break for you to go get your coffee.
But I'm doing well. I'd much rather be in New Orleans where it was like 65 and nice. This seems like a punishment. Like we did something wrong.
It is cold today.
Yeah.
We were all complaining last week as far as, it's so bad for the ecosystem to not have ice on the lake. And now we're just like, I take it back. I don't care about the lake.
I don't care about the lake. I care about the fact that I'm slipping and falling like every step I take.
You need better shoes.
I have brand new shoes.
Crocs don't count.
These are not Crocs. These are Allbirds. These are wonderful. I don't think
Allbirds have a lot of traction on them. No, that's not. That is slipping and sliding.
You know,
That's the electric slide.
You need treads.
You need treads. You need boots.
You know what? I come here every Wednesday for support. Being upheld by friends, I considered past tense the both of you friends. Now you're all like, better shoes.
Anyways, Jane, how are you doing?
I have boots on with treads. I'm doing well.
Not falling.
I am not slipping and sliding and falling. But I agree with the cold. But we knew this was going to happen. Yeah. And Greg and I were talking about this off the air. It might be 40 degrees next week.
Yep. Yeah. It's supposed to be the fourth. I always tell people, like, I complain about the cold for fun, but I always tell people, like, hey, we live in Wisconsin. We signed the terms and conditions agreement by staying here, so we can't really whine that much.
We can whine. We can certainly always make it a segment and a talking point on a radio show that is about Wisconsin because it's
true.
We're commiserating. Anyways, all right. So coming up today, like always, fun show, good show. At 12 o'clock, Jim Santel, the legal eagle, as he is referred to, host of Morning Cannolis on the Civic Media Network on Saturday mornings, and also longtime lawyer as far as spent 30 years as a criminal prosecutor and civil litigator with the United States Department of Justice. Class is going to be in session because I know you like reading case law.
I love it.
So you're different than I am, and you're different than Jane is, and you're different than a lot of people. There's a lot of responsible voters out there who know that they should vote in the upcoming primary, which is February 21st, and then the general, April 4th, for Wisconsin Supreme Court. We're in a very unique situation where we have four candidates, two that lean politically on each side. And he is going to come here to kind of break down not so much the individual candidates, but our court system, what is a county judge versus an appellate court? And what kind of cases go in front of the Wisconsin Supreme Court? What should we be looking at as far as what makes someone qualified to be in that position? And I'm sure this will also go into some of the pros and cons of electing versus appointing justices. But I thought this was important to do because most of us don't interact with the legal system. We're either not lawyers or we don't love reading case law like Greg Bach does, or and don't necessarily go through civil litigation. Sometimes if you go through divorces or whatever, like, but most of us don't know the law. Yeah. And so why are we trusted to elect the people who make our laws? And so I felt like this would be a very good, insightful, educational segment to do.
I resent the idea that I'd be made fun of for the fact that I like constitutional law.
Fun of you. I think it's a very, I don't, I think you're, for someone who's not a lawyer,
yeah,
I think that's a very unique attribute of yours. I don't think there's a lot of lay people who are like, let's read some case law. This sounds awesome. And I love you for it.
I love you too.
Then later in the show, Brad Schlaikowski, who is the co-founder of Courage MKE, is going to join us to talk about a new property that Courage MKE bought. They are a collaborative movement to provide housing, resources, and services for LGBTQ youth who need help. And so I'm really excited for that conversation. And then we're going to end the day with this term, body neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means.
Yeah.
Is it good? Is it bad? Is it neutral?
Is it right down the middle?
Is it right? Is it Goldilocks? But to start off, it is National Girls and Women in Sports Day. And as a young person who spent a lot of time playing sports, comes from a big sports family, I tweeted out this morning my most prized picture of myself when I was 9 years old and was one of two girls that was in the Little League in Madison.
Oh, wow.
And I had a short boy haircut and I had people call me Chris. And it's a picture of me kneeling on one knee with a bat over my shoulder, just smiling, happy as can be. And I said, "Happy National Girls and Women in Sports Day from Chris Bry, who at 9 years old was terrible at Little League, but at least she got to play."
Everyone got a trophy.
And so I've been sitting on the actual story I want to talk about because it's an investigation that happened or what was published last May, right ahead of the 50th anniversary of Title IX. And it was updated in December, but I kind of, because I was like, I don't know when the right time to talk about this is. And then today feels like a good day to talk about it because I feel like this investigative report got published without a lot of fanfare, especially in light of how much fanfare the Save Women Sports movement has gotten in regards to keeping trans athletes out of women's sports. And that being the biggest threat to women's sports. When in reality, this report showed that Title IX was intended to close the gender gap in college and for college athletes. But schools are rigging the numbers. And the University of Wisconsin being certainly one of them. And so the fact that the actual threats to women in sports kind of just goes without talking about it. And yet the attention that we give, I mean, in Wisconsin, like there's so few cases of, you know, top athletes being displaced because of a trans athlete in women's sports.
The numbers are minuscule.
Numbers are minuscule. Whereas every single major university with major sports programs is rigging their numbers. And what does that mean? So by packing women's sports teams with extra players who never compete, double and triple counting women while undercounting men, and even classifying some male practice players as women.
What?
So we're going to complain about trans athletes in women's sports, but then count men who are practicing with women as women.
What?
Yep.
I don't.
Schools across the nation collectively conjured the illusion of thousands of more female athletic opportunities than there actually are. And I don't know why this is not a bigger deal.
I don't know either. That's fraud. That seems just like pure fraud.
So the university, to take this, you know, make this a little bit more personal for us, the University of Wisconsin claimed to have 165 athletes on its women's rowing roster, even though more than a third of them never raced once. And some of the women before the regular season had quit before it even started.
165 for any team period seems like too much.
And throughout, we'll link this. It's the report is from USA Today. And it was from Kenny. There's a whole team that worked on this. Kenny Jacoby, Lindsay Schnell, Rachel Axon, Steve Berquitz, Dan Wolkin, Nancy Armour. And the report's called Title IX was intended to close the gender gap in college athletics, but schools are rigging the numbers. And it's a hefty read because it's everywhere. And it's wild, and it's so they're packing teams. They're packing, like, cross-country teams. So there was one example where there was 87 women on the cross-country team and 13 men. Because only, like, the top five can score points for in a race, or and so having that many people in the team doesn't make sense. It doesn't give you any kind of competitive
advantage.
And the same thing with rowing. And it's like these places where they can fudge the numbers so that they're technically complying with, because there was the complementary law in 1994 that said that schools that are receiving, just like Title IX, schools that are receiving federal funding have to, then this additional law was they have to report their numbers to the government, of being like, this is how many, this is equity.
Right.
Or this is being equal. And yet it's absolutely not. So my point is, where are all the save women's sports people when it comes to this topic?
I mean, they don't care. I don't know how to, they just don't care because it's the sports aren't important to them. They're afraid of trans people. They're transphobic. They're, you know, that has nothing to do with it. And my guess is that the people who are part of this group have no idea, have no clue that this is happening at all, because it's not their hill. They don't really care that much about, either topic, in my opinion. They're just afraid of trans people. That's their basic thing.
But you were right, Greg. This is fraud.
Yeah, this just seems like...
This is fraud.
Apparently it's not.
How can it not be fraud?
Because, I mean, at least when I was reading the report, it is... It's basically, they're getting around the spirit of the law, but technically they're complying because the numbers are the numbers. And they're, I mean, if the women are on the team, they're getting counted. And, I mean, it's just...
But I'm talking more about, like, the men who are counted as women, though. Like, that seems like I can understand how you can wiggle your way through the whole, you know, some people quit, some people don't show up. We still have 165 people at the beginning of the year and there's nothing you can do about it. But when you're counting men as women, that just seems like out and out fraud. And why the NCAA, why the law, why nobody's getting involved in any way, shape or form is beyond me. That doesn't make sense. It just makes no sense. And those people who are trying to, quote unquote, protect women's sports are transphobes, and they couldn't care less about this topic.
I agree. All right. Well, we're going to take our first break. We're going to keep the conversation rolling when we come back. If you have thoughts on this, you are welcome and invited to join the conversation. 844-967-2789. Let women play sports.
Yes.
This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network on this Wednesday, February 1st. Happy first day of Black History Month.
Yes.
We're going to talk a little bit about that at the end of this hour and throughout the entire month.
Mm-hmm.
Greg Bach is here.
I am.
Because it's Greg Bach Wednesdays.
Yeah!
Friend of the show, comedian, writer. What else do we call him?
Case law reader.
Bearded American.
Yeah.
And of course, we have Jane Mettner on the board.
Heck yeah.
We are talking about a investigative report that is now a little old, but I've been sitting on it kind of waiting, like, when's the right time to talk about this? And because it's National Girls and Women in Sports Day, I figured today might be a good day to talk about it. And we will certainly put this in today's show notes if you would like to go read it. And I just maintain that there's so many more threats and obstacles for women in sports than the threat or the supposed threat of trans athletes. Here's another one for you that I've been sitting on. You know that there's some mascots who make more than female professional athletes?
Oh, gee, tell me something that won't shock me at all.
Rocky, the Denver Nuggets mascot, is the highest paid mascot in the NBA. Rocky makes $625,000
a
year.
What?
I've made all the wrong decisions.
Diana Taurasi, three-time WNBA champion, five-time Olympic gold medalist, is the highest paid player in the WNBA. Diana makes $228,000 a year. So I'm just saying, as far as in the spirit of today's honoring today, when we talk about the benefits and the equal opportunity for women to play sports, because this goes back to what we were talking about yesterday. Greg, you missed yesterday. There was a WIAA high school basketball game between Brookfield Central and Cedarburg over the weekend.
All right.
And some of the parents got a little overzealous over a call, and the announcer proceeded to say, "Shut up."
I heard about this. I heard about, oh, come to the Laughing Tap. Please be that guy. That'd be lovely. I'd love to have you around my life.
And so, you know, obviously we kind of talked about the, was he right? Was he wrong? But we also talk about, because this is something that I believe in deeply, is the power of sports is much more than just winning and much more than scholarships and much more than professional opportunities. And so when we talk about the opportunity to play sports, it's to enhance people's lives of people who are playing them. And so thus what Title IX was supposed to be. It's not necessarily the gateway to producing a bunch of professional athletes. It's that giving equal opportunity. And the thing even more important to point out about this, when Title IX was written and put into law 51 years ago this summer, the proportion of women to men in college, women made up 43% of students.
Back then?
Back then. Now they make up 60. And so even though there are a larger population of the student body across the country, there's still BS like this where they're padding numbers and padding ancillary teams to keep more funding, more opportunities for male sports. I'm fired up.
I can tell you're fired up. Your eyes are fired up. I can tell. And I love it. I love this Kristen Bry right here. I want more fired up Kristen Bry in my mornings. There's nothing collegiate educational about what I'm going to say is I'm not surprised at all. I mean, I didn't know, and you bring this up, but like, the only thing that surprised me was the whole counting men as women thing. Cause like I said, that sounds like fraud and that just sounds like something you should get in trouble for, but everything else is like, yeah, that makes sense. Why wouldn't they do that? Cause you know, they're colleges, they're the NCAA, they'll do whatever they can to do whatever they can. I mean, we've seen it for decades now, just not paying athletes and saying they're students, they're not professionals. And all of a sudden, of course, they're going to do these things. And of course, they're going to screw over women. So, yeah, I'm sorry. Nothing real scholastic, but yeah, of course they do. But they should be held accountable. And I feel like long are the days gone where like this is like explosive investigative reporting where it's like, oh my gosh, this story is going to make the news. Yeah, no, nobody cares.
It was a well reported finding as far as how pervasive this
is. But it's not going to be on any of the news channels.
I mean, sure. But I mean, it's also old. Like this, the original report came out like approaching a year ago.
Yeah.
And so it was like, I didn't have a show yet then.
Right.
And so it was one of those things I found after the fact that I was kind of like, all right, like, but we'll eventually find a reason to talk about this because it's not going to be fixed by the time I talk about it.
Well, right. But what's interesting is that it has been a year. And to Greg's point, there really hasn't been any collective outcry about this, you know, which is tragic.
You know, every once in a while, I think it was during the bubble, the 2021 March Madness NC2A tournament, because they canceled it in 2020, because that was like the very beginning of the pandemic. And then in 2021, when their numbers were still obviously very high, but they kind of did the NBA thing where there was no fans and everything. But they had, I'm forgetting what the name of the, she's like a 6'8", she was playing for Oregon. I forgot what her name is, but she was one of the star players. She had a video go viral, I think, on TikTok of her showing the inequities of the women's gym versus the men's gym. They basically had like tower of weights, like freehand weights, and like a stretching band and like a yoga mat. They're like, here you go, ladies.
Sabrina Ionescu?
No.
Okay, never mind. I tried.
Maybe it was Sabrina. If I saw her face, I'd know exactly who. She's like a dominant player too. She's really good. But
yeah, I mean, or maybe Sedona Prince.
Yes,
I think that's
it's Sedona.
Sedona Prince. Yeah, I mean, once again, not surprised. And the reason why I'm not surprised, because none of them are held accountable. They don't have to care. Just like the Save Sports people, they don't have to care about this. They have to care about scary trans people. Scary trans people are everywhere. Did you know that? They're everywhere.
All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to move on to some other headlines happening in Wisconsin. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
She marked our trail up the backbone ridge. How many times can one dog be? Keeps me high as an eagle when I'm on the skids. I guess you gotta come down eventually.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry on the Civic Media Network. No matter where you're listening, on a radio, on your phone, on a podcast, streaming app, whatever. Thank you for tuning in. As always, you can listen to this as a podcast. If you miss any part of today's show, you can find it on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen, where you can also find more of the show notes and all the articles that we discuss and all the guests and their socials and all of that stuff. Or you could just find us wherever you find podcasts. Greg Bach, you're here. It's Wednesday. It's always a fun day.
Oh, my good gravy. Yes, it is.
Did you have something to, you looked like you had something to respond to me.
No, I was entranced by your introduction.
Great.
You're welcome.
I'm an entrancing person.
You're entrancing.
Oh, all right. Well, we started off hot, and I don't know if I'll get as hot with our two topics, but moving on to some proposed bills in Wisconsin, one of which has to do with felons being banned from owning vicious dogs.
Yeah.
And I am approaching this because I want to be fair about it, but I should say full stop. I love pit bulls. Me? I do not own a pit bull, but I love pit bulls. I love Rottweilers. I love big, meaty dogs.
Yeah, they have very squishy faces.
That get a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
And because they are so strong, naturally, like Cliff is a jerk. If Cliff was big, you would not want Cliff around. Cliff just can't do any damage, right?
Because he's a chihuahua.
He's a chihuahua. Like, but these other dogs, in one moment, their bad day, they can cause a lot more damage. But it doesn't make the entire breed a bad breed.
Correct.
So, more of the details behind this. State Senator Andre Jacques. He's proposed this before, but he's bringing it back. And he said, vicious dogs are as dangerous as guns in some cases, which right away...
Red flag number one.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
You can kill a lot more people a lot faster than even the meanest, strongest pit bull, Doberman,
Kristen,
Rottweiler combo.
Kristen, did you hear about the mass dogging that happened up in Oconto? Oh, my God. So many dogs.
And so he said, you're talking about putting a weapon in the hands of someone who is not supposed to have access to it, which, to be fair, felons cannot own guns. Some do. And we also have talked plenty about the boyfriend loophole of people who have broken the law, who are still allowed to own guns. But I don't want to get too far away from that.
People broke the loophole who can have boyfriends.
Both too. But the thing with this bill is it doesn't target a certain breed of dog.
No.
It just asks for police to be the deciding fact, like who decides and determines whether a dog is vicious or not.
That's absurd.
Yeah. It's going to be the first time you're going to hear a cop go, maybe you should defund us. I don't want to be a dog. Like, I don't work for Westminster.
And I'm not saying that this doesn't happen. like, I don't, in the article I read, so this is from Corey Hess in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, I didn't see any numbers attached with this as far as how often, how big of a problem this really is.
I mean, certainly there are dog attacks and people have been killed by dogs. That definitely happens. Yeah. But I'm just trying to think of the last maybe three cases that I remember off the top of my head. None of them were felons.
I mean, this is such a weak bill because, like you said, it doesn't target a specific breed. It's only targeting felons. So do we just say, hey, you know what? Let's just go the full way. Felons, you don't get dogs anymore because you never know. Because you never know. Your chihuahua could have a bad day and just mess up someone's leg. And I'm not even being funny here. Like,
oh, there's so many bad dog owners.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing is, like, why are we targeting felons? Are you doing this to score points saying we're cleaning up the streets? This doesn't make sense. Nothing about this bill makes sense. Period.
Well, if anything, it doesn't make sense to be a priority to me. And if you have examples or numbers behind how big of a problem this really is, that it needs to be addressed and be, you know, pushed through and expedited. No, that's not the word that I want.
What's
expedited?
It is now.
Through committee to get a vote on it. And I'm totally wrong, and Greg and I are totally wrong. 844-967-2789. But I just feel like this is
out of the blue.
Kind of.
Yeah. It puts too much pressure on the police. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And they and 10, 15 years ago, they could have easily said, like, yes, felons can't own Rottweilers or pit bulls or Doberman Pinschers or German Shepherds because they all could be. They're heavy-duty dogs. They're all heavy-duty dogs. But they can't do that now. One, because there's all this new research says that pit bulls aren't as dangerous as we thought they were. And also, it makes it just targeted more on the felons. Like, now a felon who just owns a dog has to be afraid? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to say it ain't fair.
Well, it's also interesting because this is, in Michigan, Illinois, and Iowa, they all have laws that prohibit possession of vicious dogs. By serious felony offenders. I don't know if it's a little bit, their law is a little more detailed as far as naming breeds or who gets to decide what's vicious or not, or if there's any kind of statute of limitations of when you can get a dog. But it just, I think my thing with this is like, really? This is what you want to push forward right now?
This is the same legislature who thought that voter fraud was such a huge problem that they pushed through millions of dollars worth of legislation and work in the whole system with there's no proof.
Do you think he owns dogs?
God, I hope so.
Who?
Andre. Jacques.
Oh, Andre Jacques. Of the Pierre.
Big guy. I wonder if he has a big dog.
The whole thing. Andre Jacques of the Pierre. It's like he's like.
He does have like seven children.
Then who needs a dog?
Fair.
How about this? People named Andre Jacques. Never mind. You know what? That would just been mean. Forget it. I'm not going to say it. Sorry, right. Folks. Yeah, this is a ridiculous.
You're a dog lover. How do you feel about this law?
Well,
this proposal. Sorry.
Again, any dog can be vicious. Any dog can be vicious.
Even Cliff.
Even Cliff
with his five teeth he has left,
and even Barkley, you know, when he was alive, in the right circumstances. And so you can't have just this broad based definition and not narrow it down. And then why stop at dogs? Why not all pets? Felons can't own any pets. What if he owns a boa constrictor and it gets away?
What if he owns a ferret?
But it just seems...
A feral ferret.
A feral ferret. That would be, you know what?
Named Will Ferret.
And I think, too, about for people who really do want to change their lives for the better when they get out of prison, working with dogs and working with animals is a good way to do that.
Well, we've talked about that on... the show about, was that November?
Yeah, November.
When we were talking about the program that's in Oshkosh.
Yes.
Where different inmates get chosen, and it's a volunteer program.
And it's highly sought after.
It's highly sought after as far as they take turns training working dogs. And, like, the healing of that, and for them, also for the people who end up getting the dogs, like, the whole cycle of that and, like, the healing part that animals can provide us. And, again... these big dogs just need love too.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And this is this like it's a two shot across the bow at felons, because you know felons, well, they're, you know, apparently in the eyes of Andre Jacques, they're worthless. And vicious dog, I'm sure if you asked him, he would say, oh, pit bulls, Rottweilers. And I could make a lot of different, I could trail that back to a lot of different thoughts he probably has about certain people in society. But like, yeah, this is a two shot at two groups of beings.
German shepherds.
I mean, it just doesn't, it, I don't know. It just, it, you know what it is? You know what it is? It's just mean. It's just mean. There's no other way for me to say it. Like, you can say unfair, you can say what, but like, it just sounds mean to me. Like,
and maybe it won't go anywhere, because it was previously introduced in 2015 and in 2021, and it had unanimous support in committee, but then it failed once it was in the full legislature. So there's obviously other Republicans, because if it failed once it went to a vote for the full legislature, there's Republicans who are like, no.
This is, show me some data.
I think that's well, the here,
show me some data. Show me the list of felons with vicious dogs who have attacked people.
Well, and also just, or anyone. Like, how often are people, like, what is the actual, in Wisconsin, the rate of deadly or really, really damaging dog attacks? Then break it down by were they a felon or not.
We should probably just talk to postmen.
My friends.
Talk to your mail carrier.
My friend's a mail carrier. He could tell some stories.
I'm sure.
But excuse me, I'm coughing a lot today. My apologies, everybody. It says here in the story, says, unfortunately, there's a significant problem of animals being used for such unlawful activities as dogfighting, guard dogs, for narcotics trafficking, and other illegal activities, and as tools for intimidation. Okay, fine. Attack, like, go after that stuff then. Don't just make a blanket thing. Assume that a felon who has a dog is going to be into these things here. Like, there's absolutely nothing here. It's just, it's vague and it's mean. Yeah. What's his name again?
Andre Jacques.
Andre Jacques, I challenge you to a duel of words in da pierre. That is French for from pierre.
I think we got a caller.
Curtis from West Dallas wants to check in. What do you want to say, Curtis?
I want to say, you know what's really funny? You're talking about the stereotype with pit bulls and stuff like that. I had the most perfect dog in the world for 12 years. I couldn't go to South Milwaukee because the mayor down there said that pit bull.
Yeah.
My Duke was the best dog ever. Everybody, whoever knew my dog was the best dog. But it's not the, I always tell people, it's not the dog, it's the person that raises the dog. Mm-hmm. But as far as a person in general, I have a few friends that are inmates, you know, that came out recently. But from incarceration. But the thing behind it is, a dog is an excellent thing for therapy.
Yep.
And it gives them responsibility. So when you take that away from a person, you might as well take all the people away from, you know, from anything. Well, and the bottom line is, if you spell the word dog backwards, what does it say? I will see you. If you want to talk religion,
whoa.
You know what I mean?
Dang.
Totally.
There's a reason why the creature was, yes. When the creature was like an animal, in a cat, a dog, a bird, whatever you might have, the reason why is a therapy, because of the fact that when you're upset, the dog knows it and it calms you down. It's automatically done. There's everybody. And from diabetes, my brother's blind. He has a blind dog. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a purpose for everything. And the bottom line is, when you try to take something away from somebody, it's like, I think we have more problems in different police forces and stuff like that to worry about than to do something about a dog.
Well, and Curtis, too, when you get out of incarceration, it's got to be tough enough to have support and a support system. And that's a role that a pet can fill for you, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Correct. And you can pet the dog and it calms you down.
Totally. Totally. Curtis, thank you so much for the call. But I think, and I get, you know, the devil's advocate side, if that was your argument, would be, well, you don't have to get a vicious dog. It's like, all right, well, then list what the breeds are. But also, what if it was the dog that you had before you went away?
Yeah. Once again, doesn't make sense. I don't like this. Not a fan of Andre Jacques. If you spell dog backwards, it spells God. If you spell cat backwards, it spells demon spawn. That's true. That's English. Did you know that?
That's phonetics.
Demon spawn that doesn't care about your feelings.
Speaking of phonetics, do you know it's the 50th anniversary of Schoolhouse Rock?
Oh, my God. They'd be so ashamed of us.
Yes, they would.
God.
We need a new Schoolhouse Rock.
That would be great. Hey, Greg, there's another thing for your list.
Schoolhouse Rock, make another. Oh, sure. Just let me write that down. Compose an entire new TV show. You know, you couldn't do it nowadays. The moment you try to do it, that's woke. That's just too woke. Trying to teach children. Because
Ron DeSantis
stripped the AP African studies away. I mean, like it's just everything's too woke nowadays. It's too woke, friends. Cats and dogs, too woke.
Isn't the Stop Woke Act in the courts right now?
Possibly.
We've already talked about that Florida, once, and I think I never went back to look up and see what the status was. Because I think it's like, if you can't define woke, how are you going to make this into a law? Anyways. All right.
We almost got fired up. Kristen back.
We have this slow down.
Oh, sorry.
Because I think we are firing each other up.
Firing. I'm sorry.
So we're going to take a breath. When we come back.
I'm going to pet my imaginary dog.
Right before I went on my honeymoon, Judge Derek Mosley was here.
Oh,
and we talked about so many delightful things.
He's so delightful.
So delightful. And one of them was the fact that he does Black History Month posts every single day. And since today is the first day of Black History Month, we're going to start reading his posts. Come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We are rounding out our first hour and where we started with National Women and Girls in Sports Day. Even more, I mean, I don't know if it's more important because it's the full month, but today is the first day of Black History Month.
Right.
And we are across the Civic Media Network, certainly on this show. I know Earl has a lot of stuff planned and he gave us some names of different people to reach out to. So I think throughout the entire month, we certainly want to do a lot to highlight, despite being the shortest month of the year, Black history, specifically Black history in Wisconsin that sometimes we don't know a lot about, even though there is a lot of it. And I thought, at least for today, to do a little segment on our friend of the show, Judge Derek Mosley, who this is my plug that I will do many times. He actually might come back on the show just to talk about his posts either tomorrow or Friday. But Judge Derek Mosley, forgot how long he's been doing this. Do we have the clip of when he was here?
I do.
So let's talk about that a little bit.
When did the Black History Month daily post start?
Yeah. So my mom has always infused Black history. So I'm going to be honest. This was a guilt thing for me.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to be 100% honest. My mom told me when I was a kid about the Tulsa race riots, because my mom grew up in Tulsa.
Okay.
Okay. So I have family that went through all of that. And so I went to school and we didn't learn it. And I told her, I'm like, that didn't happen. That didn't happen. And she was like, it happened. And I'm like, I haven't learned it in school. It didn't happen. And I always carried that with me. And I wanted to make sure that my kids weren't having that same experience, right?
Yeah.
Where they weren't learning our history. And since it wasn't taught in the book, it didn't happen. And then when they had the 100-year anniversary and everybody's like, the Tulsa race riots, of course, I'm like, oh, my goodness. It just comes up all the time.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make sure my kids didn't have that experience. So that's why I started these posts.
So it is exactly what it sounds like. It's every day for all of February on his Facebook, which is public, and his Instagram, Derek Mosley. He posts a paragraph about a story that you may or may not, more likely, have not heard about when it comes to Black history in our country. So the one today is, in 1960, four little six-year-old Black girls embarked on a journey to desegregate the schools in New Orleans, Louisiana. Although there were four girls, most people only know the name of one of them, her name being Ruby Bridges. Everyone has seen the photo of the brave little six-year-old Black girl walking down the stairs, escorted by three white U.S. Marshals. Even Norman Rockwell painted a picture of her and her escorts. Ruby Bridges was the only Black student to attend William France Elementary School. The other three girls, Gail Etienne, Tessie Prevost, and Liana Tate, attended McDonough 19 Elementary School together. Like Ruby, these three brave little six-year-old girls were escorted by U.S. Marshals, threatened by angry crowds, and feared for their lives. On the first day of school, Tessie Gale and Liana Tate were left in the hallway outside of the principal's office for hours and began playing hopscotch on the floor tiles.
By the time the three girls were finally placed in a classroom that first day, the parents of the white students had begun arriving to take their children out of class. At the end of the day, Tessie, Gail, and Leona were the only three students left in the building. By the time the girls got to sixth grade, Tessie was fed up with the harassment and transferred out of the all-white school. Leona and Gail continued all the way through high school graduation. In 2020, hearing that McDonough 19 Elementary School was abandoned and in disrepair, Leona Tate purchased the building to preserve history. She had it recognized as a historic site and is now listed on the U.S. National Register of Historic Places. The Tate, Etienne, and Prevost Center is now known, as it's now known, features 25 affordable housing units and an exhibition space about the history of desegregation in New Orleans, civil rights, and restorative justice. Ruby, Leona, Gail, and Tessie are all alive and only 68 years old.
Oh my gosh.
I was there. I could have visited. Oh, that was beautiful.
That's wild, right? That, I didn't know that.
They're only 67.
Oh my gosh.
68.
But yeah. Wow.
Well, and that goes back to what we've talked about before is like when the disservice all that most of the civil rights photos we see are in black and white. Mm-hmm. So it makes it feel like it's so much longer ago than it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we also always like take like one or two great pictures and always focus all of our attention on one person or one instance so that, you know, Ruby Bridges burned into our memories, burned into our minds, and we don't have a further. Could you, I mean, just like listening to that clip of Derek Mosley, can you imagine as a young man telling your mother who grew up in Tulsa, that didn't happen?
That didn't happen.
Oh my God.
But that's just such a kid thing, right? Well, like, you know, you come back and say, Mom, you're so wrong.
I mean, a lot of white people, and there are, I mean, found out about the Tulsa race riot through the show Watchmen.
Oh, totally.
I did, and I was ashamed. It's like, how did I never hear just like something, just an inkling like, oh, the Tulsa, you know, nothing, zero. It was wiped from our history, and a TV show brought it back. And now it makes you think. And you know, I love Derek Mosley so much. I'm going to read every one of them every day. I want to be his best friend. If you're listening, sir, please be my best friend.
Well, he also, I think he started his new job at the Lubar Center.
We should go visit him.
So we should. I think there's an event coming up. I was like, I scroll through it. I think Chevy, Mayor Johnson, David Crowley, and two other, I forgot who the other two people, but all like black leaders in Milwaukee. They're doing it like one of his first events with his new job at the Lubar Center. And so I need to put that on the calendar and go check it out because I'm very excited to see what he does over there. But yeah, so we're probably, I'm going to get permission from him, but it's a very low hanging fruit and a very easy way to celebrate this month.
And look at what you can learn.
It's a paragraph. It's going to take you a couple minutes just to read it. You know, and I think in general, it's just an opportunity. There's so much we don't know as far as only relying on what we learned in school of our history and when it comes to race. And so we're certainly going to take the opportunity this month as white people to try to educate ourselves. Yeah. And I encourage you to do the same.
I just wanted to clarify, it's March 21st on the issues, New Leadership and New Milwaukee at the Lubar Center. Yeah. And, yep, it's going to be Mayor Johnson, County Executive Crowley, County Board Chairwoman Marcella Nicholson, and Milwaukee Common Council President Jose Perez.
Who's there you go.
The alderman for the Laughing Taps District.
Oh.
There you go.
There you go. All right. Well, on that note, that wraps up the first hour. When we come back, Mr. Jim Santel is here to give us classes in session when it comes to our court system. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Get up, stand up in the morning.
Give it up,
stand up for your rights.
Stand up right now.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Don't give it up, don't give it up.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your rights.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up.
Stand up for.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.